Hello, you are listening to episode 2 in our podcast series. This episode is about the process of running the workshops in light of the fact that we consider that so critical to the outcomes of the training and practical tips for achieving a more successful workshop process. My name is Marieke de Villiers and with me I have Ian Cooper.
Hello Marieke.
And Francia Kutsia.
Hi Marieke.
So our first questions, how are the modules structured?
So each module has a package of resources for the facilitators and learners and consists of a facilitator's guide, a learner's guide, as a PowerPoint slide deck of 3 to 4 slides and some documents which we use during the activities. The facilitator's guide is a very useful resource as it contains the outline of the module and questions relevant to patient cases as well as clear learning objectives. And this is mirrored in the learner's guide with the activities with the questions, but only the suggested or model answers are left out. Each module has more or less 5 to 7 activities with it, and which are based around a commonly occurred patient scenario and the challenges that clinicians face. And then those activities build on each other so that it works towards a direction of finding a solution or achieving the desired outcome for the patient as well as the healthcare system. And that's another dimension which is great of these activities. It's not only limited to patient care, but it also looks at the system and the functioning of teams. So these activities include small group discussions, some writing activities like completing tables and diagrams, and there are some role plays worked in between the activities as well. And for facilitators, all these materials are available on the Stripe website, which one can download from there. Then the Stripe workshops require that you use certain of the core modules. Out of the 17 modules, there have been 4 core modules identified. And then those we're allowed for 2 other modules which we choose and selecting on the site and what we think would be appropriate for the context and participants.
Thank you, Francia. That was very interesting. I just want to add that the content on the Stripe website is hosted on the AfriHealth website, so you can Google AfriHealth, then you will find the Stripe, and then you will find the modules. What is the process that you follow in running the workshops?
The first day starts with giving some background to the workshops. That's followed by some introductions from the facilitators, and then we focus on setting up the groups with achieving a good mix of all the students and clinicians. This is followed by a pre-workshop test to get a baseline of the participants' knowledge about HIV care. And this can be done either paper-based or online. And there are some advantages and challenges to both of these approaches, where the online process makes the data capturing for the system a bit easier. It sometimes takes a bit of time getting everybody on the website, and sometimes internet accessibility to a group of 50 can be a bit of a challenge, where the paper-based approach takes quite a bit of time for the data capture and uploading. So the facilitator then introduces a topic and also presents the patient scenario. That would be followed by some group activities and with the resources available at each table, and then the groups have to engage with that and answer some questions relevant to that scenario. After that, we ask each of the groups to give some feedback on what their approach or their solution was to those questions. And then at the end of the two-day workshop, we have a post-workshop assessment to see if that knowledge base has increased after the two-day workshop. And then we also elicit some feedback from the participants of how they've experienced the workshop and what they would recommend to make the workshop better.
And that feedback, of course, you use in changing maybe the next workshop to whatever is needed. Right. Okay, so what have you done to create an appropriate atmosphere to maximize participation and discussion in the workshops?
So it is very important for us to have our participants feel comfortable so that they feel they're in a safe space and that they are keen to participate and contribute to the workshop. So we start by just trying to get them used to the environment, and after we've allocated participants to their tables, that they introduce themselves, their roles and their background and how they're involved with the care of HIV patients, and allow some time that they get comfortable talking about their roles and also being comfortable with each other. So we also make use of a number of ground rules that will allow equal opportunities for people to participate, but also that they will feel respected and not be scared to mention their opinions. Sometimes we ask the participants to come up with these rules and also ask them to suggest some actions, actually punishments which should follow if participants or workshop facilitators break these rules. Sometimes facilitators end up singing and dancing at the workshop. And indeed, one of our colleagues had to do that.
As punishment for breaking a rule.
Yeah, not sticking to time. And It's also quite useful that the activities and the guides allow for the different professions and students to participate and give input at various times. For example, where there's questions about the effects of antiretroviral therapy, a pharmacist is more likely to lead the discussion and give input, and the nursing staff could be providing the group feedback and also give inputs when it comes to PMT, CT. And then again, community health workers can share their experience in the caring for HIV patients in the community.
But it's very much not saying, okay, you must answer that in terms of profession, but hopefully get in the groups to hear and identify them for themselves what resources they have within their group to answer the questions and learn from each other.
Yes, we really aim that they would draw on each other's experience and knowledge and understand each other's roles.
Right. And that is why these podcasts will be so useful for the facilitators to help them to understand how to actually do that. It sounds to me like sometimes you have quite big groups. So how have you managed these introductions in a group of 40 or more participants then?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, one often in a workshop wants everybody to know everybody, but with a smaller group you can do that. Most of our workshops have been 40 plus. We've had 60 in a workshop, and you can't do that. So that's why what we do, as Francois mentioned, is to ask the participants in their groups to introduce themselves to each other, and they will be in that same group for 2 days, so they really get to know each other, and this saves some time. We get the facilitators to introduce themselves to everybody so that they're known because they move across the groups.
Okay, that's quite a clever solution. Okay, Francois mentioned the setting of ground rules before the training starts. Can you perhaps tell us a bit more, what are these, what you call ground rules, you use during workshop and during the small group sessions?
So these are rules that allow for all participants to contribute freely without fearing that they'll be ridiculed for an opinion, and hopefully encourages participants then to contribute to the workshop. So at times we allow the participants to set up these rules, but there are certain, some of the rules that we will add if they are not mentioned. Often they cover most of them. So these rules would include that participants have mutual respect for each other as well as their opinions. Very important that all cell phones be put on silent mode and not disrupt the workshop. And when somebody speaks, we really ask people to listen and not to have side conversations in the background. And then more for the facilitators is to stick to time frames, but when there's an activity, there's also a time frame where each group has to achieve or answer those questions. And then quite important is that the groups or participants return on time after tea and lunch. We also include that we want participants to take turns when they give feedback to the bigger group, and it's not one person speaking at a group for the whole workshop. And we strongly encourage that certain attitudes be encouraged and fostered throughout the workshop, and one of them is that instead of judging, that an attitude of curiosity be fostered or maintained. So when somebody says something that goes against your values or is upsetting, that you will remain curious to try and understand that. And the same with assumptions. When we come with assumptions to the workshop, that we will allow those assumptions to be turned into questions instead of assuming things and moving down towards judgment and rejecting somebody's opinion.
Thanks, Francia. I like these two final simple rules that you mentioned. So I will just repeat it. Turn judgment into curiosity and turn assumptions into questions. So, okay, let's get practical. What resources do you need for the workshop?
So you need a venue that would be conducive for participation, and then the necessary furniture would include tables and chairs, and would allow for groups of 5 to 7 participants per group. We also make use of flip charts and pens during the workshop. And for people to identify one another, it's useful to have stickers and pens to use as for participants to have name tags. Also required is the learner and facilitator guides to be printed beforehand and available. One of the activities requires to have a scissor to cut the activity cards, and that's part of the preparation. And for the writing exercises, if participants are not bringing their own pens, it's useful to have a box of pens so that they can write in their groups. And then there are certain additional materials that go along with the activities which can be downloaded from the Strike workshops or the Stripe website. Then we also make use of local guidelines, and for our setting that is making use of the PAC or the Adult Primary Care Guidelines as well as the PMT-CT guidelines, which are relevant to HIV care in South Africa. Other useful extras include a portable microphone as well as speakers to play videos. And for the short PowerPoints, obviously, you'll need a data projector and a computer as well.
I think in terms of the materials, to add that there will be relevant materials depending on the context we are in. So the Western Cape, Northern Cape, Eastern Cape would be different. And similarly, if we went to another country, there would be other local materials right. That would be relevant. Because the point is to encourage people to look at the available guidelines and to get familiar with them and use them.
Right, process. Yes. And that also assists in sustainability within that particular context. So now we get to a very important question. What is the role of the module or workshop facilitator?
Maybe if I can come in before Francois talks about some of the specifics and to say that it's a team approach. So the distinction between a module and a workshop facilitator is not really significant. I mean, we have one person who kind of takes the lead of the whole workshop, but then there's a group of people who will be involved in facilitating each of the modules, the six modules during the workshop. But that group will really function as a team for those 2 days rather than having pretty clearly differentiated roles.
So you almost model the team.
We try to, and it actually helps when we can have people from different professional backgrounds. Yes. So it's been great that we have doctors, nurses, a speech therapist at the moment as part of our facilitating team.
Yes, indeed. It works quite well.
But maybe I interrupted you, Francois. You maybe want to carry on the...
That's fine. Thank you for that. So... yeah, we talk about facilitators, so we really want them to facilitate and not to teach, not to go to didactic teaching and be talking most of the time. It is quite important that the participants engage with the questions that are asked in the study guide and come up with answers and solutions to those questions. And sometimes that means when participants ask questions that the facilitator rather answers those questions by asking another question, either to the participants or to the group, and rather stimulate thinking and coming up with solutions and end up talking and giving a lecture. It's also important that... the facilitators feel that they can draw on the resources in the room as well as on the participants, and that they don't have to answer everything. That's a key that they can. That enables somebody with fairly little experience in teaching or on the topic to also be a facilitator. And typically for a workshop, we would have between 6 or sometimes 5 facilitators. And while somebody is leading the module facilitation, the other facilitators are also to be involved and move from table to table, seeing what's happening there and encourage participation if there's some people dominating at certain tables, and also be continuously involved in the workshop. Occasionally, the facilitator needs to be a bit of a mediator if there's some conflicting views or there's some tension building up, and then just to sort of ease the situation by just reminding participants we are here to think about it and work together towards solutions. And then it's quite important, since there's a lot happening in the workshop, that the facilitator has best try to stick to time and try to stick to the time limits. Occasionally we have to move over that, but we attempt as facilitators to go to the time, stick to the time limits. And then at the end of a module, also to present a short summary of the key issues that were learned and discussed in that module.
To add to that, maybe one of the things that we've seen is that each of the workshops that we've run so far is different. The composition of the people is different, but the way the workshops run is different as well. So that in some cases one needs to do more intervention with groups, some cases you need to be quite directive with groups. In other cases we've seen they're running so well by themselves that we can really step back and just watch and just have a watching brief in a sense and not intervene all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That will be very useful for people facilitating these workshops. So our final question for this podcast is, can you give us some tips to avoid over-reliance on just didactic lecturing during the workshops?
So we accept that many of the people that we involve as facilitators aren't familiar with this way of presenting a workshop and taking on the role of a facilitator. And therefore we meet with them the day before the workshop and spend an hour or two with them making sure they understand the principles or the educational principles of the workshop and the approach that they need to follow. Then also the materials are designed to increase participation, which is very, very helpful. The fact that the PowerPoints are limited to 3 to 4 slides and doesn't go up to 30 slides, it really increases that chances for participation. Now and then we'd add 1 or 2 slides, but that would also be linked to rather activities and getting conversations going rather than a slide filled with text and multiple bullets to convey a lot of content. Then we get a feel for certain of the topics when we see that the group is quite passionate about something or some deep reflections are coming through. We will allow for discussion to go on a little bit longer than the allocated time. And that helps with the workshop not feeling rushed. And that's one of the feedbacks we got at a previous workshop. We're chasing the time limits too much. People feel rushed and they actually start disengaging. And we also accept that certain of the modules, like Module 3, which covers TB and HIV co-infection, covers a lot of content with regard to the antiretroviral treatments. And there we allow a little bit more for didactic teaching, but still balancing that with that people can find additional resources and then not try to cover everything in that module.
I think what we also do in relation to that is that where we see something is more kind of factual knowledge, to have a group discussion around it is in the small groups is possibly not productive because it's actually just a set of facts. Right. So then we rather try cover that in the big group or in a slide or something, and then that moved them on to something that's more about application or around how you deal with different contexts or different scenarios.
They would have the resources of that content to go back to in case they forgot.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we also we try and monitor each other and as facilitators and encourage each other in terms of how we can do things more constructively and positively rather than being over-reliant on didactic teaching. Yeah. Because we recognize in all of us, we've grown up with that approach and it's very easy to slip back into standing up and teaching. So we have to kind of encourage each other.
Well, thank you, Francio and Ian. This was very informative, which brings us to the end of episode 2. And just in summary, this was about the process of running the workshops. In the light of the fact that we consider it so critical to the outcomes of the training, and we gave you quite a number of practical tips for achieving more successful workshops in future. Thank you.